for just brevity and to follow Rinpoche's example, we're just going to say one prayer at the beginning, the motivation prayer composed by Atisha. Do you know the prayer I'm talking about? What motivation prayer was composed by Atisha? It's a prayer that you've probably said 100,000 times. Sangye Chodang Sukhi Chognam La Jangshu Bhardu Agni Kepsuchi. I take refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. Or you could say the highest could go with all three, the highest Buddha, Dharma, and assembly, because you notice, as Rinpoche taught before, the first three Vajra points are Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, Buddha, Dharma, and assembly. It's the same Sok, we say, is in Ghana, I think, in Sanskrit, which is another word for Sangha. Also, we use in Tantra when we talk about Ghana Chakra, right? Puja, Sukhi Korlo. So that prayer, Rinpoche may explain it now, maybe he won't, encompasses all seven points. It's said to be, he's taught in Bodh Gaya some years ago that Omo was there, I don't know if anyone else was there with us, that the Uttara Tantra could be thought of as a commentary to that verse. So we'll just recite this three times. Does everyone know the verse I'm talking about? Do you know the verse? Sangye Chodang Sukhi Chognam La. Do you know Tibetan? Okay. So the meaning is, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. Maybe the word highest could go with all three. Usually people translate it as highest assembly, but I think you could take it chok as highest Buddha, Dharma, and assembly. By the merits I accumulate by giving and so forth is the usual. Dagi jinso gipe sonam ki. May I achieve enlightenment in order to benefit sentient beings. Lama Sopa Rinpoche mentioned recently in Wisconsin that His Holiness the Dalai Lama said that instead of saying sonam ki, which means by the merits, sonam is a Tibetan word that means merit, usually that just refers to karma. So His Holiness has said, sognam ki. Sog means collection. So by the collections of giving and so forth, meaning the collection of merit, sonam gi sok, and the collection of wisdom, because those are the two collections that we need in order to achieve enlightenment. Rinpoche related that His Holiness had said that was a very nice way of reciting that verse, to change the word sonam to soknam. Soknam still means plural, but sok means collection. So the collections, meaning the collection of merit and wisdom due to giving and so forth, meaning what? The six perfections, yeah. Very good. I'm going to have to augment his grade. It wasn't so high. I'm not sure. That may be one exception of someone getting a certificate. And also, when we recite this verse in teachings, instead of saying Dagi Jinsok, it's by the merits of giving and so forth, usually the audience says Dagi Chunyan Gipe Sognam Ki. Do you know what that means, Chunyan? Chu means Dharma, Nyan means to hear or listen. So when we use that verse in listening to the teachings, and if you don't know that, you may notice the older members reciting it that way during the teachings. Dagi chunyan gipe sognam ki, drola penchir sangye drupa shok. May I achieve the state of Buddha to benefit all migrating beings. The teacher, if you ever teach the Dharma, if you're explaining it, you would say Dagi Chushe. So you may hear, if you listen to Rinpoche, he won't be saying Dagi Chunyan. He won't be saying by the merit of listening to the Dharma. He'll be saying Dagi Chushe, by the merit of expressing or teaching the Dharma. May I achieve enlightenment. And you can see by his own example, when he says these verses, he shows us, I mean, he is a living bodhisattva, but he takes the example of meditating for some time with determination, not just glibly saying the words. So after reciting this verse three times, maybe for auspiciousness, we'll do it in Tibetan. Those of you who know the meaning, at least, you can follow, you can think of the meaning. And then we'll spend a couple minutes just trying to meditate and calm our mind and set that motivation. Basically, this very famous verse by Atisha is mentioned to be both taking of Mahayana refuge, because it's not just taking refuge in general, this is to the highest Buddha Dharma and Sangha. Sangye Chodang Soki Chognam La Jangchu Bardu. Until enlightenment, I will take refuge. So this implies Mahayana refuge out of compassion for all sentient beings. And it's also the generation of bodhicitta, the two essential elements that we try to develop for motivation at the beginning of teachings. One that distinguishes us from just non-Buddhists, the taking of refuge, and one that distinguishes the teachings, the motivation from the lesser vehicle motivation, that is the generation of bodhicitta. So the second two lines are a brief taking of generating a bodhicitta. In fact, sometimes in very brief rituals of taking the bodhisattva vow, it's just that four-line verse that is recited three times. Okay, follow? So let's recite this three times, and then we'll meditate for a few minutes, and then we'll begin our discussion. Sangye Chodang Soki Chognam La Changchu Badu Dagni Kyapsu Chi Dagi Chushe Gipe Sonam Ki Drola Penche Sangye Drupa Shu Sangye Chodang Soki Chognam La Changchu Badu Dagni Kyapsu Chi Dagi chushe gipe sognam ki drola penche sangye drupa shu sangye chodang soki chognam la changchu badu dagni kyapsu chi dagi chushe gipe sognam ki drola penche sangye drupa shu. So you all know the name of the text that we're studying, that Rinpoche is teaching? Do you know the name, Venerable? Do you know the name of the text that Rinpoche is teaching? Pardon? It's a slightly longer name, the Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. So Rinpoche mentioned all of those words in the title. Do you know what Shastra means? Do you know? Shastra? It's not Shasta, like Shasta Abbey or something. Do you know what Shastra means? It's the Tibetan word we say Tenshu, and it does refer to the Sanskrit commentaries to the Buddha's words. Rinpoche may give, he has given some sort of etymological explanation of how the Tibetans take it. Tenshu. Chu of Tenshu means to revive or to cure. So it's a way of curing our body, speech, and mind, our actions of body, speech, and mind through the teachings. So this text was composed, as Rinpoche said, was actually expressed by whom? Does anyone know? By a Sangha? By Maitreya. Who is it? Who knows?
Maitreya passed it to a Sangha.
Maitreya passed it to a Sangha. He expressed it in which place? In Bodh Gaya or in Gandan? That sounds like a Texas. Sounds like a Texas accent. Gandan. I think even the Tibetans usually say Gandan. Gandan is a Tibetan name for Tushita. So you've heard of Tushita Heaven, right? The Pure Land. And it's actually it's the name of one of the heavens of the desire realm. Right, Venerable? Did you know that? The Tushita Pure Land is, Geshe Rapton used to say that it's a little bit like a suburb of Tushita. It's not the actual Tushita Heaven. It's a little bit outside, and only beings that have the karma to experience that Pure Land, not just any deva, can go to Tushita Pure Land. Not just any deva. Or diva, for that matter. Those of you who listen to or know about the life story of Buddha, the 12 deeds, you know that Shakyamuni was actually enthroned in Tushita Heaven before he descended to this world, right? And he handed on the duty of teaching, being the throne holder of Tushita Heaven, Tushita Pure Land, to Maitreya, who will be the next Buddha. So after the Buddha came to earth and performed the first of those deeds, was passing on the lineage to Maitreya. When he came to earth, and some hundreds of years later, a Sangha, who we'll mention in a little more detail, had the fortune of making a karmic connection. He actually received the teachings of five texts from Maitreya in Tushita Heaven, the so-called five texts of Maitreya. I think it's in one or two mornings, one or two days. And when he came back to Earth, if you can calculate, as in the Lan Rim, the lifespan of the Deva realm and how long one day is, something like 50 years had elapsed on Earth. And so he came back like 2 days older, and his brother, Vasubandhu, had already aged. I'm not sure if Vasubandhu was still alive at that time. Anyway, they usually show, when they show the two, they usually show a Sangha with black hair. And if you ever see a statue of the two of them, and the one that has gray hair, they were almost the same age, so you will know that that's referring to a Sangha's visit to Tushita, because he didn't age as, you know, visibly during that time. It was 50 earth years. Does anyone know what the five texts are that were taught in Tushita Heaven? Do you know? You know. You're a scholar. Okay. Can you translate it into English or in what the Sanskrit name is?
I don't know the Sanskrit.
There's Chudan Shuni Namche that's called... What's it called? Dharma Dharmata Vibhanga. And that's the discrimination of dharma and dharmata, which means kind of like the nature, ultimate nature, phenomena and their ultimate nature, one could say. And what else? That's one of them. That's one of the so-called discriminations, vibhangas. Right, Utanamche, so that's Madhyanta Vibhanga. Madhyanta, Mad like in Mahayana, Mad means middle, Anta means end, U in Tibetan means center or middle, and Ta means extreme or ends. So it's discriminating the central way, the middle way, from the extremes. What is actually the... Because Buddha always talked about the middle way. Okay, so that's one of the other ones. And what else?
Dodigyan
is the... Yeah, that's the Mahayana Sutra Alamkara. And that is one of the two ornaments. Ornament of the Mahayana Sutras, we could translate it as. And what's the other ornament?
The ornament of realization.
The ornament of clear realization, Abhisamaya Alamkara. Mm-hmm. What do we say? Nyontokyan in Tibetan. And then?
Gyulama.
Which is what the Tibetans translate as from the Sanskrit Uttara Tantra. So Rinpoche was saying during the teachings, I'm not sure the translation was exactly right. I may have misunderstood what Rinpoche meant, but I think I talked to Vola about it. Rinpoche had said one time, three of them were talking about the lesser vehicle. Did you hear what she said? And two of them, I think what she meant to say was three of them are talking about from the Chittimatra point of view, the lesser of the two Mahayana tenets. Because the two Vibhangas, that is the Madhyanta Vibhanga, the discrimination of the middle and the extremes, and the Dharma Dharmata Vibhagna, the discrimination of phenomena and their nature, along with the Mahayana Sutra Alamkara, those three mainly are from the Chittimatra point of view. And that's why a Sangha is often thought of as a Chittimatra. He's sort of like the founder, the path opener, I think Vola had translated it as, sometimes translated as charioteer. Have you ever heard that expression before? Do you know what that means? Someone who founded the tradition. Usually we talk about the two, sometimes they translate it as charioteers, or sometimes they say the two, how did she translate it? Path openers, something like that. What was it? No, someone who, path breakers, maybe that was it. The kind of the implication is in olden days when there were not a lot of trails, if there were a trail that had originally been set down, say in this case, meaning the teachings of the Buddha, later things might get overgrown and someone would come by later, a great being, to revivify, to reopen that path. So that's one of the kind of meanings of that. The Nagarjuna and Asanga are sometimes referred to this as, they sometimes translate as the great charioteers or the path openers. So those three, so Asanga was prophesied as being someone who was going to, by Buddha himself, who would be able to explain the definitive and interpretive meanings of the teaching. Buddha actually prophesied this in the sutras. And it's said that he founded or opened again the mind only school. But the later two, the last two of these five texts, one of which is we're studying, the Abhisamaya Alamkara, the sutra, the ornament of clear realizations, and the Uttara Tantra, the sublime continuum, these two are said to be Madhyamaka, the middle way view. Okay, so of the Mahayana teachings, is anyone lost by my saying that? You know what I'm talking about? Like, say, for instance, when we discriminate between the lesser vehicle teachings, the Vaibhashika and Svatantrika teachings, and then the Mahayana teachings, Chittimatra and Madhyamaka. Do you ladies feel you're not lost? Okay. Everyone, you follow what I'm saying? Okay. That's okay. Just write on your, if you get a pen, you can write on your thumbnail some notes to check with Maureen or Judith afterwards. They'll clear it up for you. Yeah, right. So in general, the Buddha's teachings could be encapsulated in what we say two vehicles. What he called the lesser vehicle teachings. He did use that terminology when he taught the Mahayana Sutras in some occasions. He said, if you have the capacity, please don't follow my lesser vehicle. Usually today, as I've mentioned on other occasions, it's sometimes considered condescending to use the word Hinayana. It's sometimes I remember an article written by one scholar calling about the H word. Do you know what that means in English? Like bad words, they sometimes say, don't say the S word or don't say this word or something like that. It's just so you don't say that word. So today, the Hinayana teachings are mainly upheld by the Theravada, which is one of the 18 schools of part of the Hinayana. And in general, they find that very offensive if you were to call their teachings Hinayana, because Hina in general in Sanskrit has the connotation of being lower or inferior. But the Buddha himself used that terminology. That's mainly talking about the teachings that aim for one's own personal nirvana, to become an arhat. Even though one would have compassion for others, not necessarily motivating to come back or to become Buddha for their sake. The Buddha also taught what's called the Mahayana, where the defining characteristic is, you know, the differentiating characteristic is the development of a very special altruistic mind that the Buddha called bodhicitta, the development of an altruistic intention to achieve full enlightenment, not just nirvana, eliminating all the stains from the mind, for the welfare of sentient beings, motivated out of compassion for living beings, aiming for enlightenment. So of the Mahayana teachings, we can say there are different kinds of philosophical schools that express that, those Mahayana teachings that came, talking about the view, mainly. And one of the main, there are two main schools, the Chittamatra. Do you know, have you heard that expression before? Do you know that, Venerable? Chittamatra, what does that mean? Mind only. Sem Sampa, we say. Sometimes you hear the lamas say Sem Sampa. Sem means mind, chitta. And matra, not mantra, not mantra, matra means only or mere. So mere mind or only mind. Also sometimes called the Yogacara school, although some people might differentiate between Yogacara and Chittamatra. In general, they're synonyms. And also, of the Mahayana teachings, by tenet, there's another philosophical school called the Madhyamaka, the Middle Way school. That itself is divided into two parts. And Rinpoche mentioned a little bit about this in passing. This, of the two, we talked about three of the texts were from the Chittamatra point of view. The other two, the Abhisamaya Alamkara and the Uttara Tantra, are from the Majjhimaka point of view. But the, can you tell which one this is? This one is which one? The Abhisamaya Alamkara. The Abhisamaya Alamkara is mainly talking about the Svatantrika Majjhimaka, the Tibetans say Rangyupa. But it's said that its final view, because one or two verses in it indicate that its final view is still Prasangika, is still the consequentialist point of view, the highest view. So it is said that both of these texts are talking about the highest view, but not the Abhisamaya Alamkara, not so obviously. It's talking about mainly about the path structure. And it seems to imply in its commentaries that there are three kinds of final vehicles, that there are hearers that achieve arhatship and they stay that way, you know, and so forth. They achieve their goals by different realizations. They can have three different kinds of realizations, but in other places it seems to imply there is a Prasangika basis for the whole text. The Uttara Tantra is, of the five texts of Maitreya, the one text which is considered to be not only Majjhimaka, obviously Mahayana, Majjhimaka, and of the highest of the Majjhimaka schools, the Prasangika school. So it's Rinpoche, in giving the an etymology of the name Uttara. What is that in Sanskrit? I mean in Tibetan. That's the word lama. Is that, what is that, like deity? Like la? Or what? What is that lama? Pardon? Right, but is it like any other word you know? It's like the Tibetan word for guru. Lama. Like when we talk about Anuttara Tantra. That's lame, none higher. Anuttara. Here it's Uttara, highest. Anuttara, you know what I'm talking about in Anuttara Tantra, in the Tantra sets. So that's the same word except with a prefix negative particle first. It sort of implies none higher, so that also means highest. Here, Uttara has the meaning of sublime or highest. And so Rinpoche was saying his etymology of it here was that this is Uttara here was talking about the highest view. So this text is talking about the highest view of emptiness. And, you know, that's the kind of, central ingredient that permeates all the other elements. Tantra? What does tantra mean? Is that the same word that you talk about when you talk about the practice of Vajrayana tantra? Or is this a different spelling? Or where's our scholar? What's your name?
Earl.
Earl, is it the same word that we talk about in that? Or is it a different spelling or different what?
I don't know the spelling, but I'm understanding the meaning of series or mind.
Right. Here, we translated, it's being translated as continuum. But is that the same word when we talk about that mystic? You wouldn't think so. It is. It's exactly the same word, but it's used in a slightly different way, but it still means continuum. In fact, His Holiness, when he's given commentaries on the Uttara Tantra, he said that to really understand a lot of sutras, especially something as subtle as this, you have to almost understand, you have to have an education also in Tantra and let them augment one another. In many examples like this, Lama Tsongkhapa said there were many points of sutra, very subtle points that he had difficulty understanding, but he was able to resolve them by his understanding of Tantra. And there were some subtle points of Tantra that were not clear within the Tantras that he was able to resolve by his understanding of sutra. Lama Tsongkhapa, from his own experience, and His Holiness has mentioned this many times in his commentaries, especially on Uttara Tantra. Here, Tantra doesn't mean Tantra, that this is a tantric subject, or that this is talking about the Tantras that we talk about, the esoteric teachings. But the meaning of Tantra has a similar kind of meaning. It's talking about continuum, or the string that continues through like a garment, like a woven cloth. You know, something that continues on and keeps its identity. So it's talking about, when it's talking about the esoteric sense, it's talking about our mental continuum and how it's transformed life by life, how it can be, how it can be brought to perfection. So there's a little bit of flavor of that here, although this is not considered a tantric subject. This is part of the Buddha's, if you were to call it the Sutrayana, the Bodhisattva teachings. Okay, is that clear? I'm not saying this is a tantric subject, but the word tantra is in the title, and there's a similar meaning both in the tantric subjects and here. It's talking about the mental continuum, and it's talk in Rinpoche's explanation of Uttara or Lama, Gyu Lama, Lama meaning sublime, so talking about the view. Ms. Oma.
I don't see the separation.
That's okay. Just think about it. This is a sutra teaching. This is a sutra teaching. Yeah. The title just may sound like that. In Italy, my brother and sister and can I say that? In Italy, whenever one of the great lamas came, they always wanted them to teach Uttara Tantra, thinking it was a tantric subject. It's not. It's a sutra subject. It's talking about the ultimate view, and it's talking about Buddha nature, which continues our continuum from life to life. And but the word is the same. The word tantra is the same. But it does have a similar kind of meaning in both of those cases. Okay. So, Rinpoche talked a little bit about the story of a sangha. You know who a sangha was, right? I think there was a little bit of maybe Vola hadn't heard this story as many of us have hundreds of times, so she might have missed some of Rinpoche's explanation. I'm not sure. The lady who was the mother of a sangha in her previous life had been a man, and as you heard, was too overzealous and in debating with his guru, and somehow created the karma to be born as a woman that lifetime. And she had great heart and great devotion, and she had two sons, one of whom was born to the royal caste. I believe that was, which one? What did she say? I think the royal caste, she married a king or fathered a king's child, and that was a Sangha, I believe. And there was another, Vasubandhu, I believe, was fathered by a different gentleman who was of the Brahmin caste, if I'm not mistaken. And so they were half-brothers, and Vasubandhu mainly was, at the beginning of his life, studying the lesser vehicle path and wrote some very great expositions of that, became an expert in that, and was kind of critical of his brother Asanga, always criticizing him. Oh, you know, you talk about Mahayana is like a flower in the sky, a sky flower. Do you know what a sky flower is? I don't know. Not existent. Why is it just like someone might see, look in the sky and think, is that a flower floating up in the sky? It's just like some. It's kind of the example of a horns of a rabbit or something like that. So maybe more of an Indian expression, perhaps. That horns of a rabbit seems to be something more in Tibetan. I'm not sure. So he criticized his brother Asanga very much, and but eventually became a Mahayanist. Very long story about that. Maybe on some other occasion that will come up. But the point being that the two were brothers. Rinpoche was mentioning that the mother married a king. It almost sounded, when Volo was translating, that the king was a Sangha. I'm not sure. Her son was a Sangha. Did you get that? Did she present it correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. That was my mishearing then. As Ronald Reagan is famous, says, I misspoke. So a Sangha had this great aspiration to try to revive the view of the Prajnaparamita Sutras, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, which had fallen into misunderstanding at the time. And so he had some indication, I'm not sure if Rinpoche mentioned, that he is... I remember. He had a tantric initiation, and in the point where one drops the flower fell in the direction of Maitreya, which is one of the deities of the mandala. And this gave indication, as you know sometimes from those kinds of rituals, that you have some particular karmic affinity with that manifestation of Buddhahood. So he resolved to do a retreat, not just a three-year retreat. That's right. He got frustrated after 3 years. He didn't even have a good dream, as it said. And he came out, and Rinpoche related the various things that brought him back in, actually manifestations of Buddha. Do you remember what they were? Well, on one occasion after 3 years, when he was all frustrated leaving, he saw what?
The bird's feathers had rounded the rock.
Right. You know, a little teeny cubby hole where the bird had its nest, and over, you know, a long period of time, the feathers had softened that. So that was, he thought, well, if that bird can erode that hard rock, I can, for a higher purpose, I can realize my trail. So he went back in another 3 years. Then the water dripping, and then another 3 years, needle. Yeah. Sometimes it's mentioned there were a pile of big pieces of, what would we call them, like pieces of iron bolts or something that he was rubbing with a cotton cloth. And he said, what are you doing? And the person said, I'm making needles. Here, look at the pile of needles I've made. And this perhaps is more, the other two may, we probably could see examples of, that might more obviously is a manifestation of Buddha that had to get him back after 6 years or 9 years, whatever it was, three, six. After 12 years he left, and then there was this discussion about what he saw. Usually in the teachings it said he saw a female dog, mommy dog, and she had all of these wounds. And do you know the story, Maureen? So do you know the story? What's your name again? William? Yeah, James. Yeah, actually, it was a dog.
A dog.
Female dog.
Okay.
It was a female. It was a female dog. And He tried to take out the worms with his tongue so as not to hurt them either, and couldn't find them, and saw that it was Maitreya and so forth. You know this story probably. And one of the points of it being that actually Maitreya was there with him all the time in his cave. It was just due to his lack of having purified that he wasn't able to see Maitreya. And by this final act of compassion, an act of compassion, he was able to purify that last kind of obscuration to seeing Maitreya. He didn't necessarily make reach a direct realization of emptiness or enlightenment at that point, but he'd purified some karma that had prevented him from seeing this pure form. I think Rinpoche himself, Kurdistan Shah Rinpoche, many times emphasizes this need for us to have patience, to practice the path gradually, and to keep that in mind that everything that we do is going to be cumulative. I think that's something that we kind of lack in the West, isn't it? We want kind of demand instant, coffee, I remember in Nepal many years ago, one of the most popular books when we were in Copan that was being sold in Kathmandu was Enlightenment for the Lazy Man. Everyone wants to have things quickly. I want to attain enlightenment in 3 years and this and that. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, has said for him, it's much more effective for his mind to think, however long it takes, even if it's eons, I'm going to work for the benefit of sentient beings. Not to have such a almost expectation of quick progress, because sometimes I think that might cause the mind to become depleted and deflated when you don't make quick achievement, and then you can give up. So Kirtisan Rinpoche mentions that kind of in the same context of you just have to have a certain amount of faith seeing the development of our own teachers over time, and this is how they've practiced. As a Sangha did, being able to see Maitreya, he was transported to Shida, where he received these five texts of Maitreya that you now know the names of, right? Anyway, I'm joking. Okay. Yeah, he was translated to Shida Pure Land, which is kind of jokingly referred to as the suburb. It's not. There is one of the Deva realms of the form of the desire realm is called Tushita. So Tushita Pure Land is at that level of subtlety and concentration, but it's not the Devas of Tushita. Heaven, the ordinary samsaric beings there, can't get to Tushita Pure Land. You have to have the karma to actually see that pure land and to be born there and so forth. Okay. Now, Rinpoche mentioned a little bit about the homage of the translators. And you probably all have heard this before, right? In the translations that were made into Tibetan, the translators themselves always put the title both in Sanskrit and in Tibetan. They would say Gyakar Kedu in the Indian language. Then they would give Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. And then they'd say Pergedu in the language of Tibet, in Tibetan. And then they would give the Tibetan name. Part of that was for the auspiciousness of hearing the name in Sanskrit, which is said all of the Buddhas will teach in Sanskrit, to leave some virtuous roots, to show the authenticity of the teachings, and that this was coming from the Sanskrit and not something that the Tibetans had sort of made up themselves. And then they would write a homage afterwards, the homage of the translators, which was not part of the text itself, the original text, but something that they put in order to create the merit to be successful in their translation. So every project you do to maybe dedicate something at the beginning, in this case to pay homage to the holy beings, making prostration to them, to create some physical karma to physically be able to finish that translation. It was tradition of the Tibetan kings that certain kinds of texts would have different homages. The translators would pay homage in different ways. Do you know by any chance? Who knows? Is it, what's your name?
Earl.
Do you know Earl? You're the, or maybe, do you know?
Well, the Buddhism Bodhisattvas, if it was Sutra, and to Manjushri, if it was
sounds
Abhidharma,
right. If it was Dharma.
Abhidharma. Uh-huh. And then if it were Vinaya, it was, I forget.
To the omniscient one, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, because the Vinaya is something that's, the subtlety of karma is something only perceived, deeply hidden phenomena,
only perceived by the Buddha. So those texts, the homage of the translators would be to the omniscient one. Here, to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, indicated it was of the sutra, of the three baskets, the Sutra Pitaka. Actually, Sutra Pitaka, of the three baskets, what are they talking about? Abhidharma Pitaka, Sutra Pitaka, and Abhidharma, Vinaya or Vinaya Sutra, and Abhidharma. Vinaya or Vinaya is talking about what? Rules. Just more rules.
Morality.
Discipline, basically. And the word Vinaya means discipline, dual watch, taming. And it is teaching about the higher training in what? In morality. So morality is connected. Discipline is a way to develop the teachings on the basket of discipline, mainly how to develop the training, higher training in morality. And the Sutra Pitaka mainly talking about higher training in what? Sutra? Concentration? Are the sutras are talking about concentration? Yeah, they are. The Abhidharma is mainly talking about the higher training of wisdom. So you might say, well, these things, this is talking about wisdom. It's not talking about, I didn't see anything about concentration or very little. The Buddha said all of his teachings can be put in those three baskets. It did not mean that he taught any particular teaching that was just Abhidharma. Because there's a great controversy in the Hinayana schools. The Vaibhashikas believe that they have seven Abhidharma texts in their Abhidharma Pitaka, but none of them are actually penned, or none of the authors are all arhats. None of them are supposedly penned by expounded by the Buddha, but they are said to be the Buddha's teachings. The Sautrantikas, one of the etymologies of their name is that they don't accept that. They think that the Abhidharma is found in the sutras. So those passages of a text like this might be called, those things that deal with higher wisdom might be called Abhidharma from a certain point of view. Okay, so here the main subject matter are all of the elements necessary to develop concentration. So because their homage is paid to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And then we get to the main topic of the text, the seven Vajra-like categories. So let me see here. Frank, don't look that up. What are the? Do you remember what the seven Vajra like? Say many years from now, 20 years from now, if one of your students asks you, what are the seven like Vajra like points of the Avatara Tantra, and you'll say, oh, Buddha Dharma Sangha. No. Okay, who's going to try? Karen, you can try. Buddha nature is the next one, okay? Buddha Dharma assembly, meaning Sangha in this case. The word is not Sangha, but it's assembly. Then potential.
Enlightenment.
Qualities, what we say, Yonden in Tibetan. And then Tinlay, yeah, the enlightened activity. So sometimes, maybe in when we talk about different kinds of, when we talk about the five Buddha families sometime in esoteric teachings, We talk about some of them relate with the body, some with the speech, some with the mind, some with qualities, and some with enlightened activity. So qualities, enlightened activity, like Tara, is a manifestation of all of the Buddha's enlightened activities. Okay? Those are the seven Vajra-like. Here, I'm not sure, actually Vola read out, as Jhampa Yignan, the translator, had put here, the last, he has in parentheses, four are the causes of the first three. That's not Rinpoche's interpretation at the time, and in other and when he's taught it before, he's just said last just means that's the end, and at the end, you know, say the, you know, Buddha Dharma, assembly, potential, enlightenment qualities, enlightened activity of a Buddha at the end. But maybe there's some commentary that the translator took from where that has some other implication, but the word is just end or last there.
What did the seven categories mean?
So, it's tradition in Buddhism when shastras were written, and actually when you look at even the Buddhist teachings, that at the very beginning of the text, the summary is put there. It's kind of like, maybe in a sense you might say, table of contents. Like in the Abhisamaya Alamkara. Earl, did you study Abhisamaya Alamkara? No. So in the beginning of that, there's something similar. It mentions what we often study in the Tibetan tradition called Don Dunshu, the 70 topics, the 8 categories and 70 topics. That comes right at the beginning. So there's 8 main chapters, you might say, 8 topics that are covered, and each of them are divided up so that there are a total of 70 topics. Here the text is, right from the very beginning, it's laid out that these are the main topics of the text. So this is what the text is going to be about. Okay? And then, you remember Rinpoche explained how the chapters are divided up? What is your name? Yeah. Sigrid. Do you remember? Were you following?
How the chapters were divided up?
Yeah. How were these related with the different chapters of the text? These 7 Vajra-like points.
A chapter for each of them.
So then there would have been 7 chapters, right? But there's only 5.
Yep.
So now you're beginning to remember, okay? Do you remember the thing?
Yeah.
The first chapter is talking about what?
The first four.
Buddha Dharma and Sangha.
And
potential. So this course, the course that Mamasopa Rinpoche had set out for the basic program, is mainly just the first chapter, because it's the most essential and most widespread and profound of these, in a sense. The Buddha Dharma and Sangha here in this chapter are the explanation of it. Is when we talk about the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the Sangha jewel, is the basis for the definitions that we find in many, many Lan Rim texts and other places. When it says, as far as Buddha is defined as someone having these 8 qualities from the Uttara Tantra, blah, 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 then they quote that verse. We haven't had yet. Okay? There are verses that tell about the 8 qualities that define Buddha, 8 qualities that define Dharma, 8 qualities that define the assembly or Sangha. So that's in the first chapter. And also the discussion of potential. So the different words. This word potential here, I think, is the word, Tibetan word nupa. I'm not sure what the Sanskrit is. I can't remember. This is synonymous in a certain way with other things. Later it comes, the word element comes, the word calm. You know calm? When we talk about the 18 dhatus, calm, K-H-A-M-S, not calms, but so that
also refers in the text, when I think it might be translated here as element, that also refers to the Buddha nature within people's minds. It's also referred to as the Tathagata Garbha. Have you heard of that? There's a very famous sutra called the Tathagata Garbha Sutra. Tathagata means what? Do you know, Don? Republican? What's that?
Awakened
one. Republican.
I thought next you'd be saying Arnold Schwarzenegger.
How do you know he's not?
Oh.
He's a Republican. He could be a Bodhisattva. One chance. So many years when people are listening, watching Rinpoche's, these DVDs of
this teaching, and they happen to pick up, oh, let's listen to the discussion group. They'll say, who's Arnold Schwarzenegger? Why are they there? Because he's running for governor. This is the year 2003. He's running for governor. I don't know if he will make it. You'll know when you see this DVD. Yeah, the Terminator. Yeah, maybe he's Yamantaka. Yeah? You could translate Yamantaka, the Terminator of the Lord of Death. Okay? Yamantaka. Antaka means put an end to. Anta means end. Antaka means he who puts an end to. So you could translate it as Terminator. And Yama is the Lord of Death. So the Terminator of Yama. So it could be. Never know. Where were we? Okay. Tathagata Garbha. Tathagata, of course, means one who has gone thus. Tata means thus or thusness. Gata means one who has gone. So one who has reached a state of understanding reality. So it means it's a synonym of Buddha, but it's not translated as Buddha. It has its own etymology. So Tathagata Garbha is a word that the Buddha himself used. Garbha means what? Do you know? Means heart. Because we say Dajin Shekpa Ningbo in Tibetan, means essence. Ningbo means essence or heart. Garbha also means womb, like the womb of a mother. So you could translate it as the womb of the Tathagatas, or the heart, the essence, Tathagata essence. So that's another synonym of this potential that we're going to be talking about. And Rinpoche did go on both days. He mentioned a little bit about this, because this is such a profound, this is where a lot of the explanation of emptiness is entered into in talking about this potential. What is, did you gather from what Rinpoche said what the kind of meaning is here of Tathagata Garbha, or potential, or element? It's loosely translated as Buddha nature, but there's no, you never find in the text something called Buddha nature in the Sanskrit or Tibetan. You don't find Sangye, what would it be, Sangye Rangshin or something like this. You don't find that. It's only referred to in these terms. Tathagata Garbha, potential, or nupa, I'll try to find the Sanskrit, I can't remember the Sanskrit for that, and kam, which means element, or maybe you could say inclination. Sometimes kam means inclination. There might be one or two other synonyms, but Buddha nature is not the exact translation of anything, but that's usually what we think of it as, right? You've heard that Buddha nature or something like that. Also, it's referred to, rik, or what is it in Sanskrit? Gotra, right? Lineage or class. So we talk about the Buddha lineage, Sangye Gi Rik. We don't talk about Sangye nature, Buddha nature. So we do take about the Buddha lineage. That's something that we all have. So maybe we could say there are four that I can think of offhand. There may come others. Tathagata Garbha, Buddha Gotra, or the Buddha lineage. Potential, meaning Buddha potential, and element. So all of them are referring to the same thing, which is what? Pardon? What did you say? Go on. What would? Yeah.
Yeah, we said they're all referring to Buddha nature, and that is emptiness.
No.
The Buddha nature. No, no, go ahead. Don't look through. What are you looking at her for?
She said emptiness. I said Buddha nature, so I just put them both together.
Oh, okay. No, they're all referring to Buddha nature. I said those are all like Buddha lineages. Everything is talking about Buddha nature. And I said, what is that? And so Bonnie said emptiness. So would you agree, Petra?
Essential nature and then the developing nature. And then the essential nature would be the emptiness of the mind, and then the developing nature would be the aspects of the being that transform into the Buddha.
Yeah.
Is it?
Gertie, could you hear that? That is such a good explanation.
Yeah. Okay. I got on that mic.
Okay. We have good microphones.
But we couldn't hear it.
You couldn't hear it. Okay. So I'll paraphrase what Petra said. She said that in general, Buddha potential,
there's two kinds. There's the natural, or actually when we talk about lineage, we talk about, because it means Buddha lineage, naturally abiding lineage and the developmental lineage. And the naturally abiding lineage is said, she said, is the emptiness, what? Emptiness? Emptiness of the, whose mind? That person's mind? Sentient being's mind. And the developmental Buddha nature refers to relative qualities which allow that mind to, you know, to develop merit and to eliminate the stains from it. So sort of like from the relative truth side of things.